Hey everybody, this is Jess
and Nick,
and this is Table Talk. So today we're going to be talking about relationships, and we're going to start out by talking about your relationship with a partner.
So what I think is really cool is, you know, we talk a lot about just the different aspects of our lives that contribute to an overall like satisfaction, you know, with our lives being happy. And so something that I like to remind myself often is that 70% of happiness is dependent upon the partner that you choose. So think about it. That partner is with you day in and day out. It's the person you're spending the most amount of time with. It would make sense that they would have a huge impact on your life and your choices because we're herd creatures. So I'm excited to dig into this today with Jess and tell a story. And yeah.
Thanks, Nick. One thing that I really wanted to talk about was that when we first, well, we met a year ago, but then we first started talking more at a personal level. And one of the questions that you asked me that really took me by surprise was, how do you like to be loved and cared for? Mm-hmm. And like I said, I had never been asked that before, and so I was taken aback. But this was my answer to you. So I give love to myself by going hiking, going to the gym, cooking or baking. But the way I like to be cared for is for somebody to notice that the wheels of my mind are spinning and to interrupt the pattern by simply sitting next to me, asking questions about what I'm working on, something along those lines. Another way is to know that I like black coffee, but will occasionally put some oat milk in it for some flair. And then I think the simplest way is when walking by to graze my hand or touch my shoulder, because it really lets me know that you're present in the midst of whatever chaos is going around.
Well said, can I just say. I just am blown away the way you're able to communicate the ways that you're thinking and feeling. That was beyond any answer I could have expected or, you know, from asking that question. Where's my answer? Excellent. Jess asked, what fills your cup then? How do you like to be loved? This was my response. It's such a fun question. I've never been asked either. While bringing up calm to chaos has never become my superpower, I have to actively work on learning to slow down. So I appreciate situations that bring a feeling of safety, peace, calm. Blanket forts and tea after a mentally exhausting day, that kind of vibe. I can be super outgoing, but I need lots of recharge, and sometimes it's just being alone in a room knowing someone's there with me. I love physical touch and intimacy on all levels. I like getting excited, inspired with someone. And then Jess's response was, Nikki, ... shocked face two times. Blanket forts are my favorite. And then I said, you're going to have to prove that.
Yep, for sure.
Poetic.
Yes. But I think I wanted to share that because that was still very early on when we were talking personally. Yeah. And it was still kind of under the guise of a professional relationship.
Right. What a cool midway, like a middle of the road conversation to ask as a screener question for folks, right? Like right. Just to get conversation to be on a higher level. Like if you are dating or, you know, what a great question to ask, I think.
Yeah. People don't even think about it, right? They're just like, oh yeah, this person, they like doing this and I like doing this. So it's like, it becomes very surface level at that point.
Or connected just based on one element of our lives.
Yes.
Not supportive of the entire system, which we're not taught to think of in that way. So, yeah, I think this, yeah. I had something else, but it's going to come back to me in a minute, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Oh, if everybody asked each other, you know, right? Like, how do you like to be loved? And to my credit, I think my response after you gave that beautiful answer was that I like to play to win. So I like to know the answers before the test, something like that. And I don't think that's not that I thought at the time I was being wise. I was just like giddy and nervous, but lo and behold, we pulled some wisdom out of it. But I think it's wise to consider what our answer to that question would be personally, and then also what would it be like, or what do we imagine the answer would be like for our partner or what would it be like to ask people in our lives how they like to be loved? Mm-hmm. Even our kids, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you have biological children. I do not. So you have raised the tiny humans.
Yes.
So you have that in you, like, just naturally to mm-hmm. intuit what they need. Mm-hmm. But for them to actually vocalize it, I think, is huge.
Yes. Well, and, like, for grown-ups to yeah. do that. So to see generations of kiddos who are learning that skill very early on, I think, is really neat.
Right.
Yeah. I think of, you know, Zane would be able to answer this question. I think that's really cool that a lot of kids his age at 12 could answer, how do you like to be loved?
Yeah.
You know, he would say, I like when you watch me play soccer. I like, it's quality time, right? I like yeah. when it's just us in the car and go to Target or whatever.
yeah.
But it shows them also that it's important to ask that question. Just yeah. asking the question to them models that that is a question that you can ask.
I love it. Okay, so we'll bring it back to partners. So what a lot of people don't know is that you teach a partner how to love you by showing them how you love yourself. Mm-hmm. And it happens on such a subconscious level, right? Like, so they pick up these small cues, but it's like the background processing or the peripheral processing where you don't actually have to tell them. They just pick it up over time if their subconscious is aware. However, what a beautiful world to live in that we can just be like, hey, I like to be loved this way. And yeah, then there's no guesswork that goes into it, right?
Right, right. And we end up getting more of what we want. We're not really taught that, though, like these kinds of skills. So what's neat about that is we can learn them. It's not too late. Like, mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I almost feel like we're developing the language to talk more about it, right? Mm-hmm. Or people are getting comfortable with using language to talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we were to take this relationship back to 1950,
yeah.
Somebody would come home from work and there would be a blanket fort in the living room, right? And I would be like, you're ridiculous, but I love it. And now I know that this is how you play and how you like to be loved, right? Mm-hmm. So then anytime I would notice that you would need a little bit of extra love, I would do that for you. Because you set the example for me, right? Like,
right.
How cool.
So it's even streamlining it further, right? Like, others' behavior is a lot of times indicative of what it is that they really want also. And to, like you said, to have that language to ask. We're learning to ask the right questions, mm-hmm. I think, is what it is.
Yeah.
It's like with we were talking about this the other day, like with AI, I find myself like, I keep not getting the answer I need, and I'm realizing it's because I didn't ask the question right.
Yeah.
I was asking it with my emotions and not with my logic. Mm-hmm. And so now I've started doing that in life. And I think that's a game changer.
Yeah, to ask the right questions about not only who your partner is mm-hmm. With logic, but like how you feel in life.
What's right for you.
Yes.
Right? So like I had a really powerful therapy session with one of my rock star clients who I just adore. And we were talking about this exact thing, and the question, the filter question that we ended up going back to, so she's, you know, facing this difficult situation in her life, and she's not sure what to do. So, you know, her screen or filter question, what we decided ended up being, in response to anything she's wondering, what should I do? What should I do? The next question she has to ask herself is choosing this something that is abandoning myself or choosing me? Just like kind of like a, what are those, like a flow chart, right? Like, which one is it? And so starting to ask that question is what kind of like sparked this just even more conversation, I think, among Jess and I about this. Like, that's interesting. You know, we know what's right for us and what's not because our body tells us. We get a feeling or an emotion. Those are information. And so asking ourselves those questions, taking an inventory of things that are in our life, mm-hmm. right? Is this right for me? Is this not? And like really being honest, which I think is the challenge. We really fear emotional pain. Mm-hmm. We don't have to. It's not that scary.
No. So that's interesting. So I teach that flowchart process to my clients. people get tied up in so much emotion, right? Like the what ifs and possibilities and anxiety and discomfort that comes along with it. People don't see the most simple question, right? And like you said to your client, is in the flowchart, right? Am I abandoning myself?
Or am I choosing me?
Yes, yeah,
like,
thank you.
Because, right, like, it's active. But you're right, yeah, you're dead on, yeah.
Yeah. And so the more times that you abandon yourself, the farther and farther you away get from your true self or your authenticity. And the shittier you feel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're really talking about, I love to think of it this way. I think it just is fun. But, you know, this would make sense in a video game, right? That this would be sort of how there are rules, quote unquote, to how you play.
Mm-hmm.
Now we just have to personalize it to our experience.
Yes.
You know, that we're having right now in real time.
Yes. So bringing it back to how you choose a partner.
This is Milo. We're pretty sure he died a few years ago, but
he's a zombie cat.
He's that poor old man. Don't mind him. We're actually at the kitchen table.
Yes.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
There are horses. Not ours. We can see them, though. Okay. Keep going.
So how you choose a partner and understanding the logic behind that, mm-hmm. of choosing a partner that actually loves you in the way that you like to be loved, not necessarily in the way that they are able to love.
Or the way that's easy for them.
Ooh, yes.
Or convenient.
Yeah.
Because, right, we're going to do as least amount possible to get the maximum amount of benefit. Like, mm-hmm. that's just the way humans are. So it's like, if you're never right, you set the expectation. We're training people how to treat us.
Yes. Pause. The other grumbly old man you hear is Kai. I think he's like 3, but he's just a grumbly old man. So
he has feelings about things a lot and wants to share them. But now he's sharing his home with two other ladies, the other dogs, and he's not thrilled about it.
Yeah.
You know.
What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Our goal in this was to be very authentic, and I think this is the most authentic we could be.
Right. So. I think it helps disarm us, though, a little bit.
Oh, definitely. Sorry.
Continue.
Yeah, so I'm going to bring us back to the topic at hand. So when you choose a partner, are you choosing that partner from the side that loves you or the side that does not love you, right? Who internally, because we all have, you can think of it as like the devil and angel on your shoulder, mm-hmm. of like,
I love this.
Who's the one that you're actually listening to, right? And it depends, because if you are closer, if you've abandoned yourself enough, you're closer to the side that doesn't love you, right?
So that's going to happen more frequently because it's the norm.
Yes. And if you've actively chosen yourself, the side that's louder is the side that loves you.
It's like law of averages, right? Like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
So Jess was kind of explaining that when we abandon ourselves enough, we get farther and farther away from, right, like ourselves. So those things are happening more often. We're having It's looking not great. So being honest with ourselves and starting to choose the things that are in our best interest move us closer, right? Mm-hmm. To, I think that's where you're going with that.
Yes. So it almost keeps you, if you keep abandoning yourself, it keeps you in a loop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, right, Einstein had the best definition of insanity, where it is doing the same thing over and over but expecting a different outcome.
Yes.
So if you continuously abandon yourself and think something better is going to happen, you are literally driving yourself insane.
Yes.
I mean, your anxiety will spike, depression will spike because you're digging your own grave. You feel...
Well, we end up manifesting the thing that we were avoiding.
Yeah.
The emotions are still going to find a way through. It's either going to be because you moved up, you know, and you moved through it, or because you had to hold back.
Yeah.
Your choice.
Yes. But there's so much discomfort in growth, which people don't like.
100%. And I think this is the thing lately that's been so pivotal to me is understanding that... like working out in the gym, I love to feel sore. I can feel it in my body. I know I did work. It's like amazing. I expect that I'm going to feel that way. I'm not like surprised or anything. I don't avoid it. Sometimes I pursue it because I want to get stronger. the thing that's like blowing my mind right now is that when you want to change generational patterns, you want to literally retrain your brain to have a different view of the world and therefore a different experience. It is painful.
It is.
Just like working out. But it's not physical pain. It's emotional pain. And to the lengths we go, think about it. What lengths do you go to avoid emotional pain?
Yeah.
And even avoiding emotional pain creates, it's just going to create emotional pain because it's just part of us. But I just, that just blows me away right now that it, and Jess, you said this to me yesterday, like, you know, eventually you start moving toward the discomfort because you know, just like with working out, that there is the benefit on the other side because you continue to see it because you're getting closer to that.
I really like that you mentioned that because I have a nice piggyback for that.
Cool.
So when I started working out, I noticed that I really liked that feeling of being sore too. But I would do it to excess so that it would like really be painful.
Yeah.
But it that was part of me discovering part of my core belief system, right? Mm-hmm. That like taking care of myself and loving myself should create pain, right? Because yeah. I have this deeply rooted core belief that love should be painful. Mm-hmm. And it's because of trauma that I experienced
the people from who caretakers loved you
when I was younger.
Created
yeah.
pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A plus B equals C.
Right. And it's a biological imperative for kids to not stop loving their parents, right? They stop loving themselves so that they can continue to get
because they still have the same needs yes. as a full-grown adult. It's yeah. just different ways that those need to be met.
Yeah.
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 It's like those, yeah, like we were talking about. That's really neat.
Yeah. So understanding that also may be at play as part of your pain, mm-hmm. but there is pain for purpose, right? And so yes. the discomfort you feel in growth will also be painful, but it'll be an uncomfortable pain.
It is literal growth, like physical growth. Like we're not being like, this isn't flowery talk. Like a lot of the things that I think we think are metaphorical are actually factual. And now I'm starting to see that. And I think this is a great example of that.
Yeah, you're literally rewiring neural pathways in your brain because neurons that fire together wire together.
Right. Well, and think about if you don't drink enough water one day and how you get a headache. Like, think about the impact that this is having. Yeah. Like, we don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, interesting.
Going back to how you choose a partner and that being the side that loves you or the side that doesn't love you. So coming from the side that loves you, what's the impact of that, right? Like, what do people see around you? And if you have children, right, what do they see? What example are you setting for them?
Yeah, I loved this one because it really kind of gave my mind like a little gymnastics routine. But like the choice, for example, to get a divorce, right? Choosing yourself in that situation is unintentionally causing perhaps pain to the children, mm-hmm. right? Because of this choice that was ultimately choosing ourselves. The thing that I think we have to remember is life's going to be hard one way or another. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we, you know, this may not, everything that's hard in our children's life isn't for, it's not that it's all just bad. We can't avoid it. And we know that's how we grow, but literally it's how we grow.
Like you were saying, right, having your kid watch you
make that choice,
right? And then it comes down to the same decision of, are you abandoning yourself or are you, what was the phrase that you used?
Choosing you.
Are you choosing you, right? And so once your kids see you choosing you and not abandoning yourself, like that's those neurons fire and wire together, right?
Yes.
And then
it literally, like we have to really take that literally. So, like that's, yes. Continue.
But how beautiful is that then, that they see that growth and that there is pain for purpose? And yes, it may be a little bit uncomfortable, but what's on the other side of that discomfort?
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, because decisions that are made that would be defined as like choosing us are always in our ultimate good, right? Mm-hmm. Our highest benefit. Whatever that is, right? Even though a divorce may be painful, if it's in our highest good, then it's still on the right path, right? We're finding our way back to ourselves, really.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's where I was kind of going earlier is when children see what's possible, when you choose yourself, even when it means choosing something that causes a problem, quote unquote, mm-hmm. right? Like, or a conflict or some discomfort for people around us, right? If we're ultimately choosing ourselves and it's for our ultimate good, we will only end up in good places.
Yeah.
Right? And the value of difficulty and challenge is a gift to our children. I want them to see how I maneuver that, because I want them to know what's possible when they're out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you create that generational, right, domino effect in folks.
Yeah, it's a generational shift, like you were saying, the domino effect of having that energy of choosing yourself, understanding that it is good even though there's discomfort.
Yeah.
And then having that, like, propel the next generations into hopefully just better living conditions for mental health, right?
Yeah. Well, we're meeting, we're looking, and I think the approach we're taking is, you know, looking at the elements of what make a fulfilled person on every level. We're not talking just a 2D, you know, look or, a 2D, like, piece of paper drawing of it. It's a three-dimensional model, really, you know, four-dimensional, really, but, like, we have to think about it in a very different way to get a different result. And there's a formula to do that. And I think that's the cool part. It's like the merging of what we know about psychology, what we know about emotional intelligence, and also what is logical, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the science of it all kind of meets in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
I love when it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I want to take you back. You said not a 3D model, but a four-dimensional model.
Yeah.
So what are the dimensions, do you think, of that model?
That's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think about, like, how I would even think of that, like, of what those dimensions would be.
So it's like the 3D of what is, right?
Right.
Like height, width, and depth of the physical world, but also... what's sensory in your mind?
Or physical?
Yeah, it's the sensory, right? It's
yeah.
the depth of feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the part that we, you know, and it kind of connects to lots of things probably. We avoid certain emotions more than others, right? Shame is a great one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that everybody, it's just, that's what it does. It creates, it's a way to cope that creates, you know, like a feeling that keeps us safe in ways,
yeah.
even if they're not the best. But, like, universally, we can understand that. I was going somewhere else with this.
So what was the thought, the comment that sparked the thought to go where you wanted to go? Do you remember?
What did you say before this? So, real-time ADHD. Anyone who could relate. But seriously, if you have a partner that has ADHD, please, please pay attention, because Jess does an incredible job when I have a buffering moment. And it's usually because I had, like, two conflicting things of data coming in. Something was happening somewhere else. But Jess does an incredible job of bringing me back. And I think we have a cool way of doing it. So, kind of neat.
Yeah, fun fact.
Yeah.
So, I had brought you back to having the four-dimensional
thing.
But I do not know where you were going before
okay.
that.
I think I was headed in one direction. I went a different direction. Yes, like, we're not taking into account all of the elements of our existence when we're planning or trying to devise a life for ourselves that's personally fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the journey we're on, right?
Yeah.
Like, we are learning to ask the right questions, and that's getting us better answers. Because I think at the end of the day, maybe someone would have asked me, Nikki, what do you want your dream life to look like? And I never really had an answer. I'm like, I don't really know. Or like, what would you do with $1 million? I'm like, I don't really know. Like, like, really, truly, if I really thought about it, like, I don't know. So I think that part's really interesting, that we do have to be able to imagine not just what it could look like, but what it feels like. And if we're not able to, maybe it's because there's something amiss somewhere else in the system, right? And if we can shift things around, we might get a more clear picture of where our place is in the world and what those elements have to be. I didn't even realize some of the elements that now that, you know, we are, like, you are part of my system, things that I was missing that I really, really benefit from. It's just because you're supportive of my own development, and I've just been able to grow because it's been able to be prioritized. So that, I think, is just, like, rock star.
Yeah. So there's a process in business called design thinking.
Ooh.
And it starts with empathy, right? So empathy helps define your problems. But like you monitor the system, right? And see where your issues are. And then, define the problems using empathy. So where are, like, the pain points?
Yes. Yes. What's the most uncomfortable things in your life?
Yes. Right? But not the discomfort with purpose, right? So Ooh. Understanding that difference is huge.
Yeah. Because if you are in, you know, that's, so like with choosing a divorce, right? Or an uncoupling or however you want to see it, you're choosing if leaving that marriage is choosing yourself and that causes pain, that doesn't mean you did the wrong thing.
Right.
Right? It's kind of like that. But you have to know the difference between purpose with pain or pain with purpose, or I stayed in the relationship and I'm miserable.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get pain one way or the other, and we really have to choose it. We get to choose it.
Yes. And knowing that with pain with purpose, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, yes. right? Where if you choose the opposite, to abandon yourself, that's all there is,
yeah.
right? That's like eternity, right? So are you going to choose to stay uncomfortable forever? Or are you going to choose to stay, to increase your level of
discomfort? To be adventurous.
Yes.
To be emotionally adventurous.
Yes, that is a great reframe. Thank you for that.
I love, I'm adding in like the soft fluffy to some of the like harder facts, you know.
Yes. No, you're 100% correct to be curious, right? Yeah. About what that adventure brings. There we
yes. go. Just like children, yes. right? I love this. I'm going to start thinking of it that way with my kids also, that they're on an emotional adventure just like we are. And they're having feelings that they don't know what they are or where they come from. And I know part of our job is to model what we know about those things and help them communicate and do the things. Mm-hmm. As we grow closer, naturally, that ends up happening as well. So, yeah, I think interesting. Okay.
It's just cool to watch, yeah. right? Like, to be a part of it, but also watch life happen as an observer and be like, oh, yeah, like, they're modeling that behavior, they're modeling this behavior, like... And then watch them understand the difference between quote unquote good and bad behavior, right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily in like the societal context that we have, but right. like what feels good and right to you.
Yeah. And knowing, so yeah, like having a clear picture of that younger, right, stays truer to who you are, mm-hmm. right? Because I bet that sometimes, you know, when people imagine like their safe space or something, if they're doing meditation, maybe they call back like a really nostalgic, good feeling moment from childhood, mm-hmm. right? Like there was safety, if there was safety there. Where was I going with that one? We were bringing it back around to...
modeling good and bad behavior. Oh, what feels right.
Oh, yeah, what feels right. I think, so like, this is what manifesting is.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's not some woo-woo thing. It's actually a process.
Yes.
Like, it's with steps.
Pause. So you tell me all the time, like, unless it's like a full body yes, right? Like, mm-hmm. unless you can feel
enthusiastic it. Participant. If I'm not an enthusiastic participant, and I like that. Yeah. If I'm not, then no.
Yes. Right. There is somebody had an interview where they called it like that 100% full body yes. I think it was Natalie Portman.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's exactly what that is. Yeah.
Yes. It's not like a full body yes, and your entire mind, body, and soul are in alignment and on board. Like, you need to figure out what's going on and like why that's not a full body yes.
Well, and you have to be really honest with yourself though. Do you really want what you're saying you want? If you say you want this different life or this different experience, and it's very different than the experience you have now, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a big jump, the more painful it's going to be because you've abandoned, right? Like you've been abandoned.
You've abandoned yourself.
You've abandoned yourself at some point, right? Despite our circumstances, we get free will and we get to make choices along the way, which is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And we gather information along the way from a lot of things. Unfortunately, trauma is a huge information downloader mm-hmm. For lots of reasons.
So I love that we got to talk about like choosing your partner based on logic yeah. and understanding that we set the example for our partner of loving ourselves first.
But the choices we make have, just as they may have unintentional negative, quote unquote, you know, side effects, they also have positive ones. Mm-hmm. And if we start notice, if we really look for those, right, if we're following the discomfort, we're really changing our brain.
How wild.
Right?
I am so grateful that I'm on this adventure with you.
Me too. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, this is Jess.
And Nick.
And this is Table Talk. I hope this helps, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.